Please welcome Can Do Jack.
Thank you. I'd like to take off with the bicycle thing. Copenhagen and bicycle go together, don't they? I wasn't born in Copenhagen, but it's my favorite city, so if you ask me where I'm from, I'm likely to say that before I say Madrid, Spain, or Memphis, Tennessee. But Copenhagen had bicycles, and you can tell what time of evening it is, because in the summer, if the day is over, then it will get dark for about a half hour, and then the next day starts. But if you're earlier in the evening, every taxi in Copenhagen is a Mercedes-Benz. Every Mercedes-Benz has a bike rack on the back. As the evening progresses, you will see more taxis with more bicycles, because they get drunk and give it up. And that's a wonderful thing, because the place was made for bicycles. You can go through most towns on a bicycle. You can go all the way across town without crossing a street. They will put underpasses and overpasses, and downtown Copenhagen, you cannot take a car anyway. And if you're out on the boulevard, you will find that there are three thoroughfares going each way. One is for vehicles, one is for bicycles, and one is for pedestrians. And they're totally separate by curves. So it's really hard to mess up. So if you get a drunk driving ticket for driving your bicycle in Copenhagen, you had to be really wrecked. But anyway, that's just where the story starts, and that's my favorite city. And I felt it's all the brick. There's something about the brick architecture. The rest of Europe gets away from it, and there's a lot of stucco and all that. But in Copenhagen, it's brick. And I would sit there and watch the town council house, just beautiful, and it's like just massive brick edifice. And I'd sit there until the snow got up to my ankles, you know, and I figure, well, it's time to go home. But always felt like there was a globe over the city, and as long as I was in Copenhagen, I was safe from the world. Well, my friend Bob, I have to introduce you to a couple characters. Bob was my friend, and we hired on to Scandinavian Airlines at the same time, and we became friends and colleagues. And the other character who will come up in the story is Dr. Sverig, and you'll know him when he arrives. And Bob and I studied the situation when we first arrived there, and we said, okay, the way that we do this and get time off to travel is we get the new project. They have a new project and an old project, so we got to get the new project, and we got to work together. That way, when we get ahead of the schedule a little bit, nobody's expecting it because it hasn't been introduced yet. So it's not like we're working on an existing system. And so we did that, and we traveled all over every place. But the second month we were there was the Holmenkollen Ski Festival. Now, if you let me draw a picture. If you take the left half of this glass up here and pretend you're above 40 degrees longitude, then that will be Greenland. If you go over here, there will be two countries that look like a pair of lungs, and they're glued together, and that's Norway and Sweden with Finland up here. So they're up there. Amazingly enough, this little country of Copenhagen with 4 million people, which would just be a dot there, owns this whole half of this thing, Greenland. So don't worry about where they're going to get minerals. It's all taken care of. So Bob and I devised this idea that we would go up to Holmenkollen, just outside Oslo, and we would do the Holmenkollen ski run. It was a marathon. And the most fierce thing in the world is a Norwegian cross-country skier. Do not mess with that. Leave it alone. Go on by. There's nothing here for you. But we caught the ferry from Copenhagen up to, Little Denmark is right in here. So we got, it goes up here and in the little cleft between the plume between the southern part of Sweden and Norway. That's where Oslo is stuck. And so if you go to Oslo and you go out of Oslo, as we did on the train on this lovely moonlit night, and you go a ways north, and then you go a ways west, and you get off the train, and then you start trekking across country, and now it's nighttime, and now the moon that you depended on has disappeared because the weather is changing. And so after wandering around after over half of southern Norway, we finally arrive at something. There was some kind of civilization. And so we went, we said, okay, well, what is it? Because we need a place to like recoup here. And either that or we're gonna have to make camp and bed down. The whole idea was that we would intercept the route of the marathon at the halfway point. And we would be fresh. And we would jump into the race, and we would run down, and we would be among the first people to arrive at the finish line. Okay, so it turns out that this little thing with people in it and all that was a Norwegian army encampment. Nothing like an American army encampment. I don't think there was a gun for 100 miles. So they invite us in, and they said, oh, you guys, you've been out across country. Oh, you must be very, very hungry. We'll get you some hot tea, some Glühwein. We'll be good for you. And by the way, the captain and the lieutenant have gone to town, and believe me, they won't be back all night long. So we have beds for you. And then along the way, we began to ask, well, what are you guys, what's your function? What are you doing here? They said, this is the halfway point of the Holmenkollen Marathon, and we're here to provide water to the skiers as they come through. And so, okay, great. We are at the right place, not by any effort of our own, but it, just the way things worked out sometimes. And so we had a good night's sleep, and the captain's bed was warm, and Bob said the lieutenant's bed was warm, and everything was fine. So the next morning we're out, and we're on the trail there with our skis, and so we go no more than a kilometer or so, and we're into this village, and so we start. Everybody is milling around, and you know, and but we don't know what's going on, and so we're like looking to find out what's going on, and then one hand grabs my collar, and another grabs Bob's collar, and we're pulled back away from the crowd. And one guy says, obviously we had been told by their people that there were a couple of crazy Americans up ahead, and they pulled it. They said, in about 5 minutes, there will be 5,000 Norwegian skiers coming through here. You don't want to be in the middle of the street. So stay over here until they get by, and then you guys can go on your way. Anyway, we made it to the end of the race. On the way up, we had been talking about, oh, how wonderful it is. This was our first country. How wonderful it is to be free, and we have good jobs, and we can go anywhere. We can do anything. We're just wanderers of the world. We have no country. We have no home. We just have this job, and we have to do this project. And so we met this man, and he comes up from back under everything, and he says, I've been roaming around the world all my life. And he says, I'm a PhD, and I go in search of things. And he says, you boys talk all about you're going to conquer the world and everything. And he says, boys, I'll tell you what would be the easiest thing for you to do. Go home. It's rough out here. And at the when we saw him in Oslo, it was all over. And 5 years later, I run into him again. And I said, so how's it going? Are you still roaming the world? He said, the last thing, somebody sent me to South America for this bird that existed. It's a kind of a macaw. And I got that bird, and I took it back to the people. And he says, when I finished that project, I said, hey, I'm old, and the time has come for me to retire myself from roaming around the world. So he says, for me, boys, the case is closed. But for you, the door is wide open.